This is number 0094, the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed, once again, the Stuff File Program, number 0094. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File Program, actress Dee Wallace, who is the author of Bright Light, Spiritual Lessons from a Life in Acting. She's probably best remembered for playing Elliot's mom in the hit film E.T. How did being in that Spielberg film change her?
It changed my work, and it's changed my visibility in my work. It really hasn't changed me. It hasn't changed who I am. But it was difficult for me handling not having time to give to my fans the time and attention they wanted.
Louis Ferrante is a former mobster who spent almost a decade in prison. His latest book is Mob Rules, What the Mafia Can Teach the Legitimate Businessman.
I think people are so well aware that the big financial tycoons that are running Wall Street are such crooks nowadays. I mean, you got CEOs that destroy companies and then walk away with like a $70, $80 million umbrella package. You know, after they wreck the whole company behind them, they leave with personal fortune. I mean, this is worse than the mob would ever allow. Let's be real. People are aware of this. If a Don destroyed a mafia family, he's not allowed to walk away with all the money. They're going to kill him.
Actress Valerie Ortiz talks about her very busy career, including the movie role in the spoof Date Movie, where she imitated her idol, Jennifer Lopez. Has she ever met J-Lo?
Oh my God, you don't understand. I'm one of her biggest fans, so I wish I did. I know it's kind of awkward because I spoofed her, and I did it again for a new show that Jamie Foxx is producing called In the Flow that's going to air this August on Fox. But she's one of my biggest inspirations, so it'd be a dream to hear from her. And hopefully she won't be offended.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0094 is my niece, Ayanna Scantlebury. She's also the mother of those Rugrat nephews who hosted the Christmas show that you hear every year and are also featured each week in the intro of the Idiot of the Day. So thank you very much, Ayanna, for doing the slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? You know you've hit rock bottom, scum of the earth, when even the KKK protests against you. That honor and distinction goes to the ever-controversial Westboro Baptist Church, whose members were met with an unlikely group of counter-protests at Arlington National Cemetery. This was hours before President Barack Obama led the nation's Memorial Day observances at the Tomb of the Unknowns. That's when three members of the Westboro Baptist Church were challenged by others who clearly disagreed with them, including about 10 members of a group that claims to be a branch of the KKK from Virginia called the Knights of the Southern Cross. The Ku Klux Klan guys said they were there to object to the Westboro Baptist Church's anti-troop message. Dennis Labonte, the self-described imperial wizard of the KKK group, said, "It's the soldiers that fought and died and gave them the right to free speech." A larger group of about 70 protesters, separate from the KKK, waved pro-USA signs and took turns shouting down the Westboro Baptist Church trio. The church is known for its extremist opposition to homosexuals, Jews, and other groups, and regularly holds protests at funerals of fallen U.S. service members, saying the war's dead are God's punishment for a country that tolerates gays and lesbians. Wow, the KKK thinks they're pond scum. That's really low. Meanwhile, let's go to the Darwin file, because, you know, the tree of life is often self-pruning. In DeLeon Springs, Florida, 25-year-old Jose Perez got into an argument with his girlfriend over whether or not he was too drunk to drive. She was driving at the time, and to prove his point, he threatened to jump out of the car. The argument escalated, and Perez, who was sitting in the front passenger seat at the time, opened his door and leapt from the moving car. He was not only too drunk to drive, he was apparently too drunk to even ride in one. Jumping from the moving car cost him his life, and he was pronounced dead at the hospital. Well, that'll teach him. And moving right along, if driving while drunk wasn't such a serious matter, this guy might be deserving of some kind of award. 50-year-old Timothy James McGowan of Mill Valley, California, managed to pick up three DUIs in 3 days in three different cities. According to police, on May 18th, McGowan tried to enter a closed bank and drove off while drunk in San Rafael. On May 19th, he was arrested for drunk driving in San Francisco, and on May 20th, he got busted in Novato after he was spotted staggering near his Volkswagen Beetle, asking a woman for a ride to Burger King, and then getting into his car and making a wide right turn in front of a police officer. His blood alcohol level in that Novato incident was more than 0.15%. That's twice the legal limit of 0.08. Somehow, he wasn't too drunk to plead not guilty to all the charges. And yes, he has prior DUI convictions and was arrested 4 times for public intoxication. Methinks Mr. McGowan likes to drink. I wouldn't let this guy be a passenger in a car. Never mind drive one. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News with me, Peter Anthony Holder, before we get to our first guest, in Port Richey, Florida, 30-year-old John Rockbauer was asleep in bed with his fiance when he heard an explosion around 2 a.m. When he got up to see what was happening, he found a car had literally driven all the way through his home, crashed through his front wall, went through the living room, dining room, and worst of all, his boy's bedroom. His boys are 10 and 4 years old, and the car drove right through where their beds should have been. The boys were nowhere to be found. Plus, John's brother-in-law, Jesse Data, had been asleep on an air mattress in the living room. Jesse's face and arms were scraped and sliced by the car as it churned past him, leaving him covered in blood. Meanwhile, John was desperately shouting for his kids and trying to find them. At this time, the driver of the 1998 Honda Accord, which finally stopped after plowing through the back fence with the children's swing set on the hood, crawled out of the car door. It was 32-year-old Crystal Lihea who stumbled around and actually said, "If you give me $1,000, I'll help you find your kids." Wow. Classy, huh? Classy. John told her to get back in the car. Suddenly, his boy Hayden appeared. He had been carried on his bed into the backyard with the car and deposited by a wave of junk that was once the house. He was scratched, but okay. Then his other son, Tyler, appeared. Now, Crystal was arrested and charged with driving under the influence, causing serious bodily injury, DUI causing personal injury, DUI causing damage to property or person, and leaving the scene of an accident involving property damage. Another person we shouldn't let anywhere near an automobile. Anyway, let's get to our first guest on the program, shall we? Okay. Actress Dee Wallace is also a healer, and she has written a new autobiographical book called Bright Light, Spiritual Lessons from a Life in Acting. We had Dee on our old radio show when a previous book, Conscious Creation, came out, so we're pleased to have her on the program with us once again. Hi, Dee.
Hi, baby. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on the program with us once again.
It's great to be back.
So I know you're traveling on this spiritual journey. So what does Bright Light have to offer, I guess, as a follow-up from Conscious Creation?
Well, Conscious Creation was a totally channeled book of information, and Bright Light is my personal journey through all my great experiences as an actress. You know, I've done now over 130 films. I highlight my big ones and talk about the big directors like Spielberg and Blake Edwards, and really interwoven through all that are the life lessons and the spiritual lessons that have changed my life along the way. So, you know, if you're just a fan and you love my work and you'd love to hear some juicy stories, you're going to love the book. And I think you're going to come out with a lot more than just that also. Basically, my family, when I was little, they called me Bright Light. I was their Bright Light. And it occurred to me into my 30s that I had severely dimmed my bright light, if not lost it. And I was unhappy, and I was pissed off, and I was a victim. And I just kind of fell to my knees one night after I'd lost my husband. That was sort of the last straw, you know. And I said, I don't want to be angry anymore. I don't want to be a victim. I want my light back. I want a way we can heal ourselves. And all of this information around healing and our light and how we could get back to the light that we are. And that's kind of what the book's about. It's irreverent, it's funny, it's touching, and anybody can just go on Amazon. They're all 5-star reviews right now, so I'm happy.
Now, you mentioned your husband. We should mention that your husband who passed away, which was Christopher Stone, who was a very fine actor in his own right. That must have been a very difficult time for you, as you've described. Was it a certain amount of spirituality that got you out of that situation?
Oh, absolutely. Spirituality and the love for my daughter. I mean, I really, like I say in the book, you know, wow, I can feel the tears coming up. I say I would do anything for her, and I could do anything for her. And if that meant getting myself back together and moving on with my life for her, I could do that. Now I do it for me, but she was the catalyst. And Christopher also, he and I shared a very deep spiritual life together through a philosophy called conceptology, which was really the first secret and all of that stuff written a long time ago. And we would go take classes in that. And it was about, you know, you're the creation of your own life and you have to take responsibility and what you fear you create and all those principles that we all are so aware of now. But, you know, bottom line, all of us have been hurt. We've been abandoned. We've been used. We've been mistreated in some way. And if we keep carrying those stories with us, it's very hard to turn up your light. And your light is what you create with.
Now, with this book, your current book, Bright Lights, and also your previous book, Conscious Creation, it's one thing for your fans and people who read the book to get it. But you have had a long and illustrious career in Hollywood, and I'm sure you made a lot of friends along the way and people you may have started acting with when you first got into the business. Have they had an opportunity to read the book? Because I'm just wondering what an insider to the Hollywood business would glean from your book, knowing what Hollywood can do to a young actor or actress?
Well, yes, and the response has been remarkable. And, you know, things don't happen any differently for us than they happen for everyone. My story is everybody's story. It's every man's story. And we may be publicized more. We may be ridiculed more. We may be challenged more, but all of us share the same story that, you know, when you get hurt, you have two choices. You either become bitter, you give in, you give up, and you lose your power, or you go, you know what, I'm not going to let them and what they did define who I am. I'm going to keep creating my life and me in joy and love and the way that I want to. And I think that's what I had so much reaction to the whole Donald Trump thing on Good Morning America this morning. But it's what people like Donald Trump do. You know, he loses a million. He says, okay, it's been a bad day. I'll create it again. I created it once. I'll create it again. Most of us aren't taught that. Most of us are taught that when things like that happen, it's devastating. You know, your future's kind of over, and we give up and start leading quiet lives of desperation. I didn't want to do that, and I don't think anybody wants to do that. And I think, I know from the emails I'm getting daily and the responses on Amazon and everything that this book is touching the chord in everyone where they go, oh my God, I remembered when I gave my light up. I remembered when I lost or gave away my empowerment. Oh my God, if Dee did it, I can get it back. I'm going to decide to be my light again, to be my power, to be my authentic self. And, you know, it's up to us. Nobody else can do it for us. That's for sure. If we stay pissed off, the people we're pissed off at control us. Bottom line.
Some of the experiences you've been through, the ups and downs, the highs and lows, does it prepare you as a person, as an actress, for, quite frankly, what the business can do? For instance, I'm sure it's no secret there's difficulty for women as they age in Hollywood. There's difficulty in getting parts. There's the changing business in general. How do you deal with all that?
Well, you know, in my healing work, and I do privates all over the world every day, I know unmistakably that the one rule that supersedes all rules is as you believe. It's going to be delivered to you, babe, for sure. So I don't have a belief that it gets harder as I get older. I have a belief that I have so much energy and passion that the older I get, the longer I'm going to last, you know? And I just did a movie with Doris Roberts, and we were talking about the same thing. She said, I don't have time to think about getting old. I work too much. And I know that it is that belief and that mindset that creates what you are and therefore what your life becomes. So, again, it's our reaction and our choice about how we want to handle whatever happens that ultimately creates what's next.
Now, again, you've had such an amazing career, and you've worked hard for everything you did and do, but when you did the movie E.T., playing Elliot's mom, such a huge worldwide hit, what was that whirlwind like when that movie came out?
It was exciting and daunting at the same time. I remember the basic question that I always used to get was, well, how has this changed your life, Dee? And I thought, well, you know, it's changed my work and it's changed my visibility in my work. It really hasn't changed me. It hasn't changed who I am. But it was difficult for me handling not having time to give to my fans the time and attention they wanted. I remember coming out of an event one day, and it was like I had always seen on television and in the movies, you know, these hordes of people clamoring to get to me, trying to get an autograph, and the guards rushing me through the crowd, and this one guy turned around and said, yeah, sure, now that you're somebody, you don't have time for us. And I just remember my heart taking this huge hit that I had moved out of integrity and become this egomaniac, even though I knew that wasn't true, that I felt that's how my fans saw me. So that was the most difficult part for me, feeling that I guess I didn't have control over, you know, that intimate relationship that I'd always had with him.
You have done so much in your career. Is there anything you haven't done that you'd like to?
Yes. I want to play Broadway. I haven't done that. That's really the only dream. I was talking about this with my daughter, who is one of my dreams, by the way. You know, it took me 6 years to conceive her, and they told me I never would. Ha ha. And I've starred in, at the time, the biggest movie of all time. I've had some very successful series on, you know, I've written now what looks to become a bestseller, Bright Light, which is jumping off the shelves now, and you can get it on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. So I've had just about every dream come true in my life, and I realize how blessed I am that I'm able to say that. But I haven't played Broadway, and I would like to do Broadway. And I would like to play a nun. If anybody has a film out there with an interesting nun part, send it to me, because I don't know. I've got to be in my bonnet to play a nun.
Well, the book, which is out right now, is called Bright Light, Spiritual Lessons from a Life in Acting. It's written by Dee Wallace along with John Nelson. And it's truly an honor and a pleasure to have the chance to talk to you. And it's great to hear somebody who not only has had a great career, but who's appreciated it, too. So I thank you for being on the program with us once again.
Oh, thank you so much. Many blessings to all of you.
Actress Dee Wallace. Her book is called Bright Light, Spiritual Lessons from a Life in Acting. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0094, and you'll find links to Dee's website, plus links to Amazon.com, where you can order her book directly for the Kindle.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. If you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. In the interest of time, kindly hold your applause until the entire program is over.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to former mobster Louis Ferrante about mob rules. And we'll meet the lovely actress Valerie Ortiz. Plus, of course, we have an idiot of the day and lots more stuff. As a matter of fact, more Stuff File news right here, right now. In Hesperia, Florida, a 33-year-old husband and his 21-year-old wife had planned to divorce, but then decided to spend an evening together trying to reconcile their differences. Things were going pretty well, and as most couples do when they're getting along, they decided it would be fun to start shooting an AR-15 rifle at a target they put in the bedroom closet. Well, she apparently missed the target and hit the washing machine, which promptly flooded the house. Police arrived, and investigators found cartridge casings in the master bedroom and a target in the closet. Bullet exit holes were found in the wall opposite the washing machine, which was riddled with bullet holes. When asked to write a sworn statement, the wife allegedly said, "I'll try my best, but I'm drunk." Deputies said no charges have been filed, so they haven't released the couple's name, although the investigation is ongoing. Okay, I'm Canadian, so I'm not going to pretend to understand the Second Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, but really, you're allowed to be drunk and shoot up your house without being charged? Really? Okay. Meanwhile, the Pope has decided to evict about 20 monks from Rome's Santa Croce Monastery, which hosts some of the church's holiest relics, for what can best be described as behavior unbecoming of a monk. The monk's days had been numbered since 2009 when the Vatican sacked their flamboyant abbot, Father Simone Fiorasso, who was a former fashion designer. Now, Fiorasso had built up a cult following among Rome's fashionable aristocratic crowd, as well as celebrity worshippers such as Madonna, who prayed at the church in 2008. But the straw that apparently broke the proverbial camel's back was when Anna Nobili, a stripper who became a nun, I can't make this stuff up, folks, performed her holy dance before an audience including Archbishop Gianfranco Ravesi, who is head of the Vatican's cultural department. For her performance, Nobili lay spread eagle in front of an altar, clutching a crucifix and doing erotic twists and turns similar to pole dancing routines. She claims her dances is a form of prayer. Well, I'm sure those who have seen her routine would have praised the Lord and said amen several times. The Pope apparently didn't see it that way. Some of the holy relics housed at Santa Croce include what are claimed to be actual nails and splinters from the cross that Christ was crucified on, thorns from Jesus' crown, and a bone from the finger of St. Thomas. Wow, a bone from the finger of St. Thomas. Oh, go ahead. Write your own punchline to that one. Meanwhile, in New Zealand is about to become the latest country to enforce a complete smoking ban in prisons. New Zealand prisons will become smoke-free as of July the 1st, and officials fear many inmates will struggle with nicotine withdrawal. So they've come up with a wonderful plan. They'll just give them carrot sticks. A national directive has been drawn up to issue each inmate with 2 carrot sticks per day. The directive explains that 1 jumbo carrot can provide 16 carrot sticks, which would be cut into uniform sizes to the best of our ability. A Corrections Association of New Zealand President Bevan Hanlon said he thought the memo was a joke when he first heard about it. He added, "I don't think it's one of their best ideas, but it's worth a try. If they have got something in their mouth, they won't be looking for a cigarette to put in it." Okay, that one's easy too. I'll just leave that one alone. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, in Foothill Ranch, California, a group of teenagers decided it would be fun to give Denny's restaurant a run for their money in regard to their current all-you-can-eat pancake special for $5. So 7 teenage boys went to Denny's and ordered the promotion, and then they began to eat, and eat, and eat, and eat. For 24 hours, nothing but pancakes. In total, the boys downed 301 pancakes, averaging more than 14,000 calories and 43 pancakes per person, all for $5. They hope the feat will establish a new category for the Guinness Book of World Records. According to the boys, one teen nearly fell asleep on the toilet, and the Denny's actually ran out of pancake batter, so they had to go out and buy more. Wow. Have you ever noticed, by the way, nobody ever actually goes to Denny's? You just kind of end up there, especially after exhausting all other alternatives. Anyway, let's get to our next guest on the Stuff File program, shall we? Several years ago on my old radio show, I had the chance to talk to former mobster Louis Ferrante, who wrote the book Unlocked, The Life and Crimes of a Mafia Insider. Well, now Louis has a new book. This one is called Mob Rules, What the Mafia Can Teach the Legitimate Businessman. It's a pleasure to talk to him again. Hi, Louis.
Hi, how are you, Pete? Good to be on your show again.
Thanks for being on. Now, it's an interesting title because you're alluding to the fact that some of the rules that apply in the world of mafia can be applied to the world of business. So let me ask this question. Do you think if most mafia leaders went legit, they could be successful businessmen?
Quite a few. A lot of the guys that I met who were successful in that life, in that world, could easily have applied their street savvy business smarts to legitimate enterprise and made millions doing so. I mean, they just basically would have had to decriminalize their minds to start with, And a lot of guys did do that. There were legitimate mob guys who rather mob guys who I know who went legit and made a fortune with companies removed from organized crime. And some of them made enough money where they were smart enough to say, hey, I'm done with the streets. I'm making a ton of money here. And the reason for their success was all the street smarts that they brought to the real business world. I mean, they were running circles around, guys that graduated from Ivy League schools but didn't have that experience that they had. So yeah, absolutely. Everything could be applied just as well in the straight world. And a lot of people in the straight world do business like mobsters. So it kind of goes both ways.
Well, I was about to ask, is it a chicken or an egg situation? Which comes first, being a good business person or being a good mobster?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, if you read the newspapers nowadays with somebody else, in the financial industry getting picked up on new charges every day, you wonder who's worse. But I guess just basically, if you do apply the street smarts you got, you could take it anywhere. So a lot of guys have done so. I did it. I'm a perfect example. I left prison after 8.5 years and decided to go straight. And fortunately, I've been quite successful, in what I chose to do, which is writing and promoting myself as an author, as a speaker. So I basically just used everything that I knew, everything that I had learned, and banged down doors, found an agent, found a publisher, using that aggressive spirit that mobsters have. They go out there every day. Obviously, I had to strip away the predatory instincts. I wasn't going to prey on people anymore, victimize people. But short of that, you still have to be aggressive. And I used that street savvy aggressiveness to get places every day.
Well, we watch a lot of movies and television, and we see the whole cops and robbers things. And if you talk to most police officers, they tell you the same thing. Every week in a television show, some police officer draws their gun. In real life, a lot of police officers go through their entire career never drawing their gun except on the shooting range. Let me apply that to the mob side of things. We see the criminal element being played out in movies and books and television as to what the mob does. But if you take out a lot of the violence in the real world of the mob, is it just a lot of business without a lot of violence? The only difference is the business is illegal?
It is, and you're 1,000% right, Pete. What goes on every day? I mean, when there's a murder, obviously, and the mob does kill people, but when there's a murder, it makes headlines. You see some guy chomping on a soggy cigar with blood all over him. He's dead, and you think the mob does that every day. But I wasn't a killer, and most of my friends weren't killers. Of course, yeah, I did know a few killers. I was in that life, so they were around. But not everybody is a killer. A lot of guys are just big earners, and they go about their business every day, and they earn big money. And most of the time, on a daily basis, the mob goes to great lengths to avoid violence because violence isn't good for business. It draws the law. It draws investigations. It corrupts people who are part of the organization get turned into informants and take down major money-making schemes or what have you. So the mob tries to avoid violence every day. Most people are just businessmen. I was known as a big earner. So when somebody had to disappear, they didn't come to me and say, we need you to take care of this guy, because they have other guys for that. There are people who are known to do that, probably with a catalog of psychopathies that they have, going on in their mind. They're nutty people to start with, obviously, if they're killers, but they turn to those killers when they need to get rid of somebody, the bosses. But most guys in the mob are just earners, and they avoid violence every day. We have what we used to call a sit-down, where if we have a dispute with each other, we have to go to a table and resolve the difference before it gets out of hand. So within an hour, no lawyers, no mediators, no president or CEO or anyone else involved. You sit down at the table, you shake, you talk out your differences, you shake hands, and you go your own way, and it's done. And in the rare event where two mobsters can't come to a resolution, then at that time they go to a guy higher, like a captain or a capo, we'd say, and that's sort of like middle management of a company. and he steps in, he presides over the dispute, he makes a ruling, and that ruling sticks. And believe it or not, there's no politics involved either, Pete. Whatever, you know, usually right is right and wrong is wrong. That's it. You know, if you have a reasonable argument and it makes sense, you express yourself well, you're going to win. If there's two rights, you know, each guy has a little right on each side, then they'll come to some type of agreement. And they'll say, listen, both of you guys are right, but you're going to have to agree upon something. And they'll make you shake, and that's it. And that's etched in stone. No contracts, no nothing, no attorneys. Once you shake your hand, that's a done deal. I mean, you know, that's period. And your verbal resume is all you got in the mob on the streets. So who you are, if you don't live up to it, you're done. You might not get killed, but nobody's going to deal with you. So you're going to have to live up to that agreement.
You know, the title of the book, Mob Rules, What the Mafia Can Teach the Legitimate Businessman, sounds like a great idea for a course. But we also live in a politically correct world. There was a time, if you go back to the 90s, with a movie like Wall Street and the saying, greed is good. No one wants to go back and talk about that anymore. So is it somewhat politically incorrect to say mob rules, what the mafia can teach the legitimate businessman? Are you getting any pushback on that?
No, it's actually, it's been received well. The reviews have been amazing, which is great. And they took it seriously. I was afraid they were going to take it as a little tongue-in-cheeky and think that, I was stepping out of bounds. You know, why do we got to listen to the mob? But I think people are so aware today. They're so well aware that the big financial tycoons that are running Wall Street and behind the financials of the government and stuff are such crooks nowadays. I mean, you got CEOs that destroy companies and then walk away with like a $70, $80 million umbrella package. You know, after they wreck the whole company behind them, they leave with you know, a personal fortune. I mean, this is worse than the mob would ever allow. Let's be real. People are aware of this. If a Don destroyed a mafia family, he's not allowed to walk away with all the money. They're going to kill him. I mean, there's retribution. There's pay. There's consequences. People today in the legitimate world have no consequences. They just operate completely out of hand. But if they're beyond the law, because they're so rich and they're so embedded, in the financial institutions or what have you, they're done. They just walk away with their money and go live in their mansion and sail their yachts. I mean, so these people are so well aware now that that goes on that they do take this seriously, which is great. You know, you can learn. And interestingly enough, my book tells you to be honorable to your word, to do the right thing, because that's how the mob does operate on a street level, aside from the violence. You got to be an honorable guy. You got to be good to your word. I never gave my word to somebody and didn't keep it. You have to respect people's houses, and you don't go looking for somebody after hours at his house because he has time with his family. You're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to go near somebody's wife. In the workplace, everybody's hitting on everybody's wife, girlfriend. We couldn't do that in the mob. You're not allowed to look at another man's wife. The penalty is death, you know, if you try to pick up somebody's wife. So in a strange sense, the mob's twisted code of ethics, and it is twisted. And in that, within that code, there were a lot of things that weren't so twisted. They were a lot better than businesses operate today.
One last quick question, and that is, I know that being in prison, one of the things you're told when you get out is you can't associate with the folks you used to associate with before. But you've written two books now. Have you heard from anybody in your past who has a thing or two to say about what you've written, especially this new book, Mob Rules?
I bump into guys now and then. I never ratted on anybody, never squealed. So I did my time. I faced a long time in prison. I faced life, actually, and I refused to cooperate. I did get 13 years, then studied law and reversed one of my cases from prison, so I got out in 8.5 years. But I still left the mob with an honorable reputation. The fact that I write books about the mob, they're not happy about that, but I don't go looking for these guys. I really have nothing in common with them anymore. We're light years apart. So, I mean, if I do bump into somebody, I say hello and goodbye. I keep it moving. I'm not going to go into a social club, sit down and play cards with them and think they're my best friends because, who knows, they probably, you know, would resent the fact that you're writing books about what they believe is a secret life, although there's no secret to it anymore.
The book is called Mob Rules, What the Mafia Can Teach the Legitimate Businessman. It's written by Louis Ferrante. And Louis, I thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Pete, as always, it's a pleasure. And I had fun with you last time and fun with you again. Thank you so much.
Louis Ferrante, author of Mob Rules, What the Mafia Can Teach the Legitimate Business Person. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0094. And you'll find links to Louis's website, plus links to Amazon.com, where you can order his book directly for the Kindle. Love my Kindle. Get one if you haven't got one. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRico Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Imagine this scene. A famous Hollywood actor is on location filming a movie when he cuts himself on a prop and begins bleeding. To stop the bleeding, he asks the studio if he can use their first aid kit. But amazingly, the studio refuses. Why? Believe it or not, the studio's afraid it will get sued. You see, the studio once let someone else use its first aid kit and then got sued. So now, with actor Ed Helms bleeding in front of them, an assistant has to be sent off to a store to buy some cotton swabs and alcohol to clean the wound. Crazy? You bet. But it happened just weeks ago, and it's a good thing this comedy actor has a sense of humor. Let's be fair, most people believe celebrities have it made. But in America, there's at least one thing that all that fame can't buy. Freedom from the harmful effects of lawsuit abuse that plague everyone else in our country, too. It's time to end this foolishness. It's time for common sense. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
From the land that brought you maple syrup, poutine, ice hockey, and Pamela Anderson, this is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll meet actress Valerie Ortiz. Plus, we also have an idiot of the day, as we usually do. But right now, one more Stuff File story before we get to our next and last guest on this program. In a small city in Russia, a 35-year-old man somehow managed to persuade a friend to bury him alive for one night, operating under the premise that this would bring him good luck. The man dug a hole in a garden and then climbed into an improvised coffin with holes for air pipes and took a mobile phone and a bottle of water with him. His friend covered the coffin with dirt and then left, after the buried man phoned to say he was fine. Turns out the good luck thing didn't work out so well, because when his buddy came back the next morning, the buried man was dead. Investigators have not released the victim's name, but said that he was a computer programmer and that he had a small child. Well, there's luck, and then there's tough luck. Yeah, that almost was a Darwin File story. Could have been a Darwin File story. Could have been an idiot of the day, too. We'll get to that, by the way, later. Let's just get to our next guest now. Valerie Ortiz is a very busy lady. She's an actress and a television host. She turned up the heat and turned heads as popular cheerleader Madison Duarte on the groundbreaking N Network series South of Nowhere. And she has also been guest starring on numerous TV shows, including Two and a Half Men, Melissa and Joey, and Cold Case. On the big screen, Valerie hilariously spoofed Jennifer Lopez as Jell-O in the box office blockbuster comedy Date Movie. And Valerie joins us on the line right now from California. Hi, Valerie.
How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on the program with us. So you've been very, very busy in a relatively short period of time and in various different mediums. I didn't even bother mentioning all the things you do online as well. You've got a couple of online shows that you're working on, too. So how do you keep so busy? Is this something that you've always wanted to do?
Yeah. You know, what's funny is my first passion was dance, and after going to Theater Magnet, kind of following my brother's footsteps, hosting when I moved to L.A. was the first thing I started doing with L.A. TV Live, and it's obviously something I still continue to do, and obviously got some guest star spots and on South of Nowhere and Date Movie, so it's always been something I've wanted to do, and I'm so happy I could do it. I feel so lucky.
I mentioned Date Movie. Have you heard from Jennifer Lopez?
Oh, my gosh. You don't understand. I'm one of her biggest fans. So I wish I did. I know it's kind of awkward because I spoofed her, and I actually, I did it again for a new show, that Jamie Foxx is producing called In the Flow, that's going to air, this August on Fox. But she's one of my biggest inspirations, so it'd be a dream to hear from her, and hopefully she won't be offended. I don't think so because, I mean, we're all Latina, so I, you know, I got some junk in my trunk. So I feel like it's all in good fun.
now tell me, with all the things that you do, what gives you the biggest thrill? What's the thing that's your greatest passion that you enjoy doing work-wise?
Work-wise, you know what? I feel like I'm about to begin that adventure right now. I'm starting to work on some children's books, and writing has always been something I enjoyed since I was a kid. Like, I wrote poems. I mean, you know, they weren't that good when I was a kid. But I loved it, and I'm working on that now. I'm publishing my books, and I feel like, in a weird way, that's, you know, out of the limelight. It's not on TV, but it's kind of something different that it's, that I'm really, really passionate about, that I feel like is going to be really, really cool, new adventure for me.
Now, you also host ABC Family Lounge, correct?
Yes.
So, again, very, very busy lady. How do you divide yourself between all the things that you do?
Well, I feel like I've been lucky. They've all come at different times. Luckily, I haven't been able to turn down projects, and I feel like in this industry and in any work, you know, you want to, when those doors open, you want to be available to take on those opportunities. So in that respect, I've been really fortunate that I could, you know, balance different things, different passions of mine. So I'm lucky. I feel super, super blessed, and, you know, it's neat. It's one of those things that when I get to go home, like I said, I'm going home to Florida next week to be with the family. And so you get to kind of like talk about everything and laugh and then just, you know, kind of be grounded again, you know?
Well, I was about to ask that. When you go home to the family, is it, oh, here comes Valerie. She's done this. She's done that. She's done everything. She's a star. Or here comes Valerie. Take out the garbage.
No, I feel like it's a little bit of both. No, my family's so proud, and they absolutely love all of this. But no, it's salary normal. My big brother still, you know, messes with me. We do, you know, normal things. It's no different.
One of the other things you do, and this is no slouch either, you're the host of American Latino TV, which is a show syndicated in over 100 markets.
Yes, I love American Latino. It's really fun because, like I mentioned earlier, one of my first hosting jobs out here was LA TV Live, and I'm working with some of the same producers that I did back then, which is now about six, almost 7 years ago. So I can't say it enough. I've been so blessed with the people that I've met, and I've been able to, like, work with again and again. And with American Latino, we get to talk about positive stories of Latinos that you may know or Latinos that you may have never heard of. So it's, you know, putting more positive energy about things that people are doing to, you know, do good things.
With all the things you've done, is there a different way people approach you based on what they may have seen you in, like when you come across fans?
Yeah, I feel that's the best part. South of Nowhere, I know South of Nowhere has the absolutely best fans that anybody could ever ask for. They're so loyal. And meeting those fans has been a kind of a dream come true. And to be really honest, it's still kind of surreal because that show really changed a lot of people's lives. And they still talk about it, and we're working on a pitch for a film right now with MTV in about a week. I can't wrap my head around it. But that's like the one thing, meeting those fans, any fans, but especially my South of Nowhere fans, they're just amazing. I can't even explain it.
So you're blessed with working a lot these days, but one of the things that's an underlying factor that we hear so much about in the media is, especially when it comes to television, is the lack of diversity. The new fall television season's just been announced for all the networks, and that is rearing its head again. There are not enough roles for blacks or Asians or Latinos. Do you ever concern yourself with that? Do you hear these things, and how do you deal with it? I mean, clearly you're working, so you don't have to worry about it too much.
Yeah, I feel like it's been a concern, and it still is, and I do want to push for more ethnicity on TV, on prime time, because I think it's real life. And I feel like, I mean, I know my circle of friends is full of all kinds of, you know, people, different walks of life. But, you know, you can't really, it is what it is. So it's like, I feel like if you put your energy towards something negative, that's going to, I'm big about, like, that's kind of what's going to be surrounding you. So it is what it is. I can't really do anything to change that right now. I can just, you know, promote, obviously, and hope that there's going to be more roles for us. And hopefully one day I'm in a position where I can produce some things that I want to, you know, say what I want to say or tell the stories I want to tell. And then in that respect, then, you know, I can do the best I can to get some more tele on TV.
Well, is there something that you haven't done yet that you really, really want to do? Or was there something that little Valerie wanted to do growing up that's still one of those dreams in the back of your mind and you say, you know, one day I'm going to do this?
Yeah, most definitely. I feel like one of my biggest passions, I love music. Now, I'm not like a singer, and I have a lot of people, loved ones in my life who are amazing, and that's their natural born talent. But I have always said that if I ever had the opportunity to play, let's say somebody like J-Lo, but this, you know, not losing her, kind of like the same way she did with Selena, that would be my ultimate dream, because I'd get to be a rock star, but I didn't, you know, nobody's going to judge my voice or say that I was lip syncing or this or that, you know, it'd be perfected. That would be the ultimate goal, playing a rock star, some kind of singer, in a film or a show. So I could kind of do everything, act, dance, and sing.
When it comes to acting, do you prefer comedy or drama?
Oh my goodness. I want to say, when you asked me that, I felt like I didn't know what I was going to say, but the first thing that came to mind was comedy. I'll take either, but I feel like comedy's always fun. And I feel like I've been lucky to, you know, with the spoofs and whatnot, to kind of play around with that a little bit more.
How have you managed to avoid typecasting, or have you been able to avoid that?
Oh, I think that's unavoidable. I feel like those auditions are always there. And I don't know, that's funny you ask. It's like kind of a conversation that we have amongst my my friends often. But again, it's like one of those things is I don't know if it's really going to go anywhere. It's just kind of, you got to put positive energy out there to any of that kind of stuff and do what you do with it. But I think I've been typecasted. I think I'd be ignorant to say I haven't.
Well, so far you've done very, very well for yourself, and people can find out more information about you by going to your website, which is ValerieOrtiz.com. I thank you very, very much, Valerie, for taking the time to be on the program with us. And by the way, give J-Lo a call. I'm sure she's dying to hear from you.
Oh, my goodness, Peter. And I one day I'm going to, you know, I tweet her. I tweet her all the time, and her and Mark Anthony, they're one of my favorites. One day she'll respond.
Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks, Peter.
The very busy Valerie Ortiz. You can find out more about Valerie and her work by going to her website at valerieortiz.com. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0094, and you'll find links to Valerie's website. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for The Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff I present, the idiot of the day.
And this week it's actually a twofer, two separate stories that together each make their own idiot. Here we go. Joseph Price, age 61, left the PNC Bank in Florida empty-handed on May the 6th, despite having passed the teller a note demanding a sack full of cash. However, he hadn't brought a sack with him. And the teller said she didn't have one either. He was arrested 7 minutes later after leaving the bank. Yeah. And Joseph Bryce, no relation to Joseph Price, age 21, of Clarkston, Washington, was indicted in May on one count of having manufactured a bomb in 2010. Bryce inadvertently called attention to himself by ordering his bomb components under a pseudonym. The name he picked, Oklahoma City bomber Timothy McVeigh. Wow. Stupid is as stupid does. Both of these guys are idiots.
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0094. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, where you can find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and again, that's 0094. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com, and stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. And you can find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can find a plethora of Stuff File merchandise to buy, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, aboard China Airlines, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ St. Johnsbury, Vermont. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. A tape of the preceding program will be sent to the Radio Hall of Fame, where it will be placed under the statue of Marconi, which is kind of wobbly.